Hi, this is Andrew Scott from the rock band Sloan, and I'm reading a chapter called Hockey Night in Quebec from Matthew Bissonnette's book, Smash Your Head on the Punk Rock. Every spring, thinks Steven, it's the same. The snow melts and then we're in the playoffs. This year we beat Boston in 3 for the Adams semis. Bug, the diehard Bruins fan, cries in his beer. Henry, the good sport, dances around in a circle. Then it's a battle with Hartford for the division finals, but we triumph 4-3. The Rangers roll over in 5 for the Wales Conference, and that brings us to the big show, the Stanley Cup. We drop the first game in Calgary, end of the world, much weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, and then take the next 4 straight to victory. The hopes and prayers of the faithful are rewarded. Oh, joy. Oh, sweet, sweet joy. On the TV, Guy Carboneau hoists the cup over his head. The rest of the team pump their arms in the air, skate in circles, jump all over each other, laugh and shout as an arena full of glum Calgarians look on from the stands. Back in Montreal, at Bug's apartment, the kids dance around the room. Henry leans into the TV and screams at the distant, flickering images. Better luck next year, you cowboy faggots! Dick Irvin, the voice of the Canadians, is saying, Raise another banner in the form, 23rd Cup in the glorious Habs dynasty, the most successful sports franchise in the history of the planet. The kids keep jumping, singing the goodbye song that is sung at the end of the game your team wins. Even Bug gets caught up in the moment and joins in when, on the TV, the crying cowboys are replaced by shots of downtown Montreal, where the streets are filled with people. And Dick is saying, Not since the days of Maurice Richard's suspension by Mr. Clarence Campbell and the ensuing riots have we seen this kind of nonsense on the streets of Montreal. The kids all quiet down. On the TV, people are filling up St. Catherine Street, cheering, singing, drinking, milling about. Seems peaceful enough, but small fires burn in trash cans. And then the sound of breaking glass, and then a louder, thicker noise from off camera, and the crowd surges forward. The TV cuts to a commercial, and Henry picks up the phone. We need a cab, he says. And Stephen asks him, Where are we going? Where the fuck do you think, he says. The cabbie won't take them any further than Sherbrooke and Atwater, so out they go. Walking down Atwater past the Alexis Nihon Plaza, there's not much traffic. A few cars are moving slowly or stopped in the middle of the street, their drivers looking around nervously. Ahead, the kids can see people streaming along St. Catherine's. They cover the sidewalks and the road. They're walking on parked cars. They're up on the roofs of buildings. The night air is pocked with yells and shouts, and underneath it all, the steady low roll of mob thunder. Stephen watches his friends dive right in. Henry has his arm wrapped around Francis as they move down the sidewalk, seemingly back together this week. Bug ducks into a dep and comes out with a six-pack. Beer for all my friends, he says. Ryan, already stumbling, takes 2. Henry sips and looks around, eyes wide like a kid at the foot of a monster roller coaster. This is so fucking excellent, he says. And Stephen has to admit to the feelings tug. You can almost hear the amusement park music, smell peanuts and cotton candy, the whirl of the rides, the hot neon flash of it all. At the corner of Guy, they see the first car flip. A gang gathered around a Honda Civic, rocking it from one side to another. Then it's half over, and everyone yelling, Out of the way! Out of the way! Out of the way! As the crowd pulls back, and the car tumbles onto its roof, where it spins like an upset beetle. A bus has turned up St. Mark and onto St. Catherine's. The driver leans on the horn, but the crowd just swarms tighter, and then the bus starts to rock. A cop car is coming to the rescue, the siren going as they try to make their way through to the lonely, wobbling bus, but the crowd is not parting. The cop car has stopped, and it starts to rock as well. The crowd grabs for the lights and the siren, and they're tearing them off the roof. The neutered cop car slinks down Bishop, while the bus teeters and then crashes onto its side, and the crowd rushes together, calling out for more. Stephen thinks of his mother and father at home watching on television. Father shakes his head and says to Mother, They're crazy. Mother agrees, I think we've seen enough. And they switch off the TV and go upstairs to bed. Stephen looks over at Henry, Bug, Ryan, and their faces are exploding with delight as they watch the cop car leave. For them, it's like Christmas, sex, pot, and free alcohol all rolled into one. Small fires are burning up and down the street. The crowd is squeezed shoulder to shoulder between the shops that line both sides. Then from halfway down the block comes the sound of breaking glass. The kids turn their heads and see people are streaming out of a corner depth with cigarettes, wine, beer, bread, donuts, etc. Then they see a shoe shop go down, an electronics store, a bookstore, and then a brick is tossed at the clothing boutique right across the street from them. The glass shakes like a gong but holds. People start yelling at the 12-year-old brick tosser, telling him to do it. Grown men and women shouting, "Do it! Do it! Do it!" The kid walks up to the window, picks up the brick. He walks back a few steps. The crowd chants. The kid looks at the brick, the window, and then real quick goes into a full windup. This time it sails straight through. Glass falls to the sidewalk in a crackling rain. A short, quiet moment. Then the crowd gushes forward. Henry jumps up. "Come on," he says. Ryan and Bug are right there with him. "Wait a second," says Stephen. And then, because it's the only thing he could think of, adds, "It isn't right." And they look at him for a second, puzzled, like he'd suddenly started talking about European history. And then, without another word, charge across the street. The three storm right in, while Francis and Stephen stop a few feet shy of where the window had been. Stephen thinks of his parents lying in bed at home, safe and sound. Inside the store, clothes are being thrown everywhere. Mannequins are falling, people are falling. Stephen is standing out on the sidewalk with Francis, peering into the dark. "This can't be right," he thinks to himself. "It may feel good, but it can't be right." And then another part says, "You are a gutless pussy." To which the first side replies, "Why bother with looting? Let's just move right to the rape and the murder." The answer? "You are an accountant waiting to happen." Counterpoint. Decency and respect still count for something. Point. Pussy. Counterpoint. But they do. Point. Pussy, pussy, pussy. It goes back and forth like that, with Stephen teetering on the edge. Ryan and Henry emerge and drop more loot on the sidewalk and are just about to dive back in when the sirens start. From side streets, cops decked out in full riot gear wade into the crowd. Lights are flashing. Bug comes bolting out of the store, and that's everyone. So they make a break for it and run, run, run up Bishop, trailing discarded plunder behind. At Sherbrooke, they turn, look back down the street where the little bonfires glow and the crowd fights the police. From there, it looks like TV with the sound down low. The long walk home starts with a large joint. Very stoned, Stephen listens to his friends laugh about the excellent riot. The streets go by, the night gets quieter, broken by the occasional passing of a tardy police car racing to the action. Then, as if, thinks Stephen, this evening hasn't been strange enough, they come up on St. Kevin's, and there is Father Tom standing outside on the steps, in housecoat and slippers, presumably trying to take the troubled city's ethical temperature. "Evening," he says. "Heard there was a little trouble downtown." "Yeah, a little trouble," Stephen listens to his friends mumble. He watches them stand there with their heads bowed, like the sidewalk has suddenly become incredibly fascinating. Watches Ryan beside him so nervous he starts to shake. It's hard to know, thinks Stephen, the things that will bother them. Rampaging and pillaging seem fine, but seeing a priest when you're stoned, now that's real trouble. Stephen watches as Father Tom chats a bit more, seemingly oblivious to the reaction he's provoking in his young flock. Finally, he says, "See you on Sunday," which makes Stephen laugh because it's been years since any of them have seen the inside of a church. "Yeah, sure, Sunday," their eyes still glued to their shoes. As they stumble off, Stephen thinks it's like some weird hangover from his parents' world. They never got close enough to understand the rules or feel the joy, missed out on the mercy, the miracles, and the love, and now all that's left is a bit of guilt, a little fear, and some really filthy nun jokes. At Westmount Park, they stop for a rest, smoke more pot as they soak their feet in the wading pool, lean back and stare up at the stars. "Look, the Big Dipper, Venus, a satellite." Ryan tumbles into the pool and swims a few laps in the waist-deep water. With all the grace of a drunken garbage collector, he starts to climb the statue in the middle. Miraculously, he makes it to the top, where he swings, just barely holding on. Stephen looks at him up there, dumb and wasting away, and starts to feel a low-down depression crawling in. What used to be fun is now no fun, and just feels stupid, and he wonders, how did that happen? How did we get to be so stupid? How did we ever get to be the stupidest of all? When, up on the statue, Ryan slips and almost falls. Hey, Ryan, calls Francis. Why don't you come down now? Nah, I'm okay, is the answer. Henry, he's not okay, says Francis. Do something. Henry wades into the pool. Hey, Ryan, come on down. But Ryan won't. So Henry climbs halfway up the statue and tries to grab hold. He catches a leg, gets Ryan by the waist, and starts dragging, and slowly the two descend the statue. All of a sudden, Ryan pushes off, and they're falling, out in the air, tumbling from the statue, a penny and a feather, through the night, to the water. Before they can even wonder if the two are dead, Ryan and Henry are up, their arms around each other's necks in dueling headlocks. They tip over again, then back up. Now Ryan is punching Henry, and Henry's punching Ryan, and they are all jumping into the pool trying to break it up. The two are staggering around in the water. Ryan's nose is bloody. He's saying, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay. Henry is disagreeing. You got a serious fucking problem, motherfucker. Ryan's answer, to what seemed to Stephen a pretty accurate assessment, is to rip off his shirt and run around the park yelling, Jesus loves me, at the top of his lungs. The others stand there, watching him sprint back and forth over grass, going nowhere, shirt off, soaking wet, bloodied face, screaming nonsense junk. And they look at each other. What is this? What are we going to do? Eventually he calms down, and Francis has him sit on a bench with her. He curls up and puts his head on her lap. The boys sit on another bench, smoking. When the sky starts to turn from black to blue, it's time to go. Stephen heads up the hill to his Westmount home, and the others keep on the walk west to NDG. The next morning, Stephen feels terrible. Hangover clouding his head, he lies in bed thinking about his friends. They were supposed to play ball hockey behind the high school, but Stephen doubts it after last night. So he lies in bed a little bit longer. Eventually he gets up, walks downstairs to the kitchen, and pours a cup of coffee. His father is at the table reading the paper. Stephen sits down to a bowl of Cheerios and starts to eat. His father looks at him. Did you enjoy yourself last night? He asks. It was okay. Didn't do much, he mumbles. Oh, don't be so modest. I just want you to know that your mother and I are both very proud. And then he passes the paper across the table. Underneath the caption, Fans ruined perfect cup win. Is a big picture of Ryan and Henry stepping out of the store, their hands full of clothes. And there is Stephen, right behind them, eyes wide, looking out at the world.